coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Hello, everybody. Chris Jordan here, host of The Curious Realm, coming to you in this first live edition. Hold on, let me brighten my camera. There we go. Hey, all right, I'm actually there now. So, welcome to this first actual live edition of Curious Realm. It killed me inside that our epic first episode was pre-recorded, but we had such a great conversation with our good friend and legal correspondent, J.L. Carpenter from jlcarpenterlaw.com. We intend to have her on more regularly to talk about these legal things as they come up in the world, talk about these topics. It was a great, great conversation talking about the concept of trial by media and how is it even possible for someone like Ghislaine Maxwell, who is currently in court for her case tied to Jeffrey Epstein for human trafficking. But how do even high profile cases like that get their proper day in court? You know, because doesn't really matter the charge. We're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty in a court of law in America. But it's interesting the way that the media turns a lot of things, tweaks a lot of things, is selling things for the highest shock value. And what do those headlines do to somebody's chances? So go back, check that episode out. I think it was a really, really great revealing conversation. And it's one thing to have that conversation amongst friends at a bar, things like that. But to have that conversation with an actual defense attorney is a totally different story. And I think it's really important that we have those conversations. That's what this show is about, is the hard conversations, the conversations that we may not want to actually have, but as a people, as a country, as a world, as a humanity, we have to have them. We have to be willing to be uncomfortable in our skin in order to grow and become something new and better. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about tonight with our good friend and guest, Mike Turber from 5x5 News. He's always coming on. He's of course a former Air Force intelligence official. Still does quite a bit of contracting in that realm. Still does. He's out helping with the Afghanistan exfiltration. He's been hip deep in Tiger King investigation stuff for the last year. He brought Jack Safarotti on to talk about Tic Tac UFO stuff. We will be talking about, in the first part of the episode tonight, the recent announcement of a warp bubble. Was an Alcubierre warp bubble perhaps made for the first time in a lab? There have been numerous articles out there. Debrief put it out. That's one of them that I posted. But there's been a popular mechanics article that was also like, hey, you know, I wrote the book on warp drive, and I don't think that actually happened. So we're going to be getting into a little bit of that exotic science, exotic technologies, things like that in the first part of the episode. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue on with Mike Turber about how the media covers things like this and how the media doesn't cover some other things. Like, you know, we've seen some articles, but we haven't heard a whole lot on CNN or things like that about China's new sun that they made that set a world record all of a couple weeks ago. So we'll be getting into how the media covers these things, how some of these things, like we've discussed before, the Tic Tac technology that is out there, and how we even discussed with Jack Safarotti whenever we had him on about how that is existing technology. It does not have to be extraterrestrial. What we're seeing, that is technology that is fully existing in labs as we speak, black budget and regular budget. So We don't have to look for an extraterrestrial source, but why is the media focusing on it in that way? So we'll be getting into a little bit of that disinformation campaign, a little bit of things like that. Whenever we bring Mike Turber on in the second part of the show, right now, feel free to stop on by, our Facebook page. That is where you can find all of the articles. Just go to Facebook, go to any social media platform and look up Curious Realm and you will find us. But our Facebook group is where we post all of the news of the week. It's where we have open conversations about different topics. I posted an article there today from D Magazine out of Dallas. Mystery Squidhead statue appears at downtown cemetery. Apparently where there was a previous statue of a Confederate general, there is now this weird, statue of a squid, on a woman's body that is supposed to be a representation of one of the founders of Dallas. Also out of CNN, six FBI agents investigated for allegedly soliciting prostitution while on assignment overseas. And out of The Hill, sleeping can make you more creative, a new study finds. And Yahoo.com put out an article today. A man accused of smoking weed inside the Capitol during the insurrection says, quote, "I know we took it too far." I guess it was at the reefer smoking that he decided he took it too far. Out of Yahoo.com also, the judge presiding over the Ghislaine Maxwell trial is a former Obama White House aide who has ruled on cases that have been attached to all kinds of stuff. So pretty interesting. Yeah, she was cases involving Elon Musk and Harvey Weinstein. So oddly, both of those found innocent. Out of The Intercept, a startup pitched tasing migrants from drones, a new video reveals. And out of fizz.org, the Parker Solar Probe has officially touched the sun. That is the first object that we have ever sent out to touch the sun, and we are successful. So yeah, how about that, everybody? Oh, go on by, check out the news of the week. Facebook.com/ Curious Realm is the group that you can find us at. You can find our page at Curious Realm on Facebook and follow all of the announcements. Make sure to stop on by the Curious Realm website. Things are up. Things are rolling. The new store has all kinds of great stuff in it. There's our announcement for Mike Turber's episode tonight. The store has all kinds of great merchandise. If you like what we do here, if you like the show, please feel free to stop on by, buy some merch. Great gifts for family. I'm working on a Curious Realm mouse pad as we speak. All kinds of great stuff, as well as books and other media from our guests. Stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That's where you can also download the free Android app. And on the Android app, as well as the website, if you go to CuriousRealm.com/live, you can actively tune in to the live video feed right there on the website. All kinds of great stuff, as well as books and yeah, that's me in the past. Welcome to the time machine. But you can tune into the show live right there. The video does not stay up, of course, but the audio does. Once the episode's done, the audio populates, all that kind of good stuff. So you can check out all of the previous episodes from Dudes and Beer there. You can check out all of the recent episodes of Curious Realm. That is CuriousRealm.com/live. Cannot wait. And I love it. Michael DePrima, a listener and friend of the show, Curious Realm articles are pretty much the only reason I'm still on Facebook. Here's to you, Michael DePrima. Look at that. I'm drinking out of a Curious Realm mug as we speak. I am shameless. Speaking of shameless people, welcome back to the show, our good friend, Mike Turber. How are you doing today, buddy?
That's the best intro ever. Absolute. No shame here, buddy.
Darn tootin'.
No, I'm doing good. Doing good.
I don't think that shame can be a quotient doing what you do, Mike. When it comes to
shape,
like,
is a variable in an equation that I don't really understand, which is good. So occasionally I have to call Jack Sarfati and have him try to figure that out for me. And then I call the psychiatrist and let them figure out the other end, and then I'm good to go.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Not sure if that,
well,
for me, maybe I don't.
Let's
somebody out there is going, what? Another person is going, I got it.
Yeah, yeah. And now you brought up Jack Sarfati, and I want to go ahead and start getting into the topic for the evening, which is warp bubble UAP technology. Our last conversation that we had with Tic Tac Jack, talking about the fact that this technology exists, things like Alcubierre warp drive. I mean, the paper is what got them the DARPA funding. You know? So, I think we just lost him. There's number one. On occasion, we have issues with our good friend Mike Turber and his connections, because he is, of course, scanned by quite a few security agencies, things like that, on the regulars. So I'm going to go ahead and connect with him via the regular and sturdy means. There it is. Look at that. He's already calling me back.
Hot dog. Did I lose you? Did I lose me?
That's it. We had to go to the private secure line, folks, to make sure things work right.
There you go.
And oddly enough, always a better connection on this line.
Yeah, I can hear you a whole lot better, actually.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's start getting into this. Just so you folks know, you can absolutely go by one of the other great things we have is the Knowledge Vault. If you go to the Dudes and Beer. God, man, that is just such a muscular reflex for my brain.
Yep.
If you go to, you can go to dudesandbeer.com/knowledge too, but feel free to go on by curiousrealm.com/knowledge. You can find the Knowledge Vault right there as the scientific studies and documents. And once you get to the top of that page, you can see the warp bubble paper that we are referring to this evening, entitled Worldline Numerics Applied to Custom Casimir Geometry Generates Unanticipated Intersection with Alcubierre Warp Metric. So not a verbose title, very succinct.
Yeah. It's very straight to the point. Only a couple of words necessary to get that point across. And that was very good.
And this, of course, comes to us via the Limitless Space Institute, which is not, is that Dr. White?
Dr. Harold White. Yeah. But he goes by Sonny when you talk to him.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, that's where he works now. He left NASA a couple of years ago, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he's still kind of working for them in a roundabout way through the DARPA projects that they've got going on. And you know, and it's odd that he would have this discovery and not even be working on actual warp drive. He's totally working on something else, the Casimir, you know, cavity, and then all of a sudden, boop, wow, he finds, and I'll explain this in a minute, but there's some controversy, a lot of controversy over this whole article and
there's a huge amount.
Huge amount. And that's been the biggest thing. And I think I'm going to explain what happened, as best I can. I'm not going to try to, you know, say I'm speaking for someone, but to the best of my ability, my understanding, I will explain how this came about and also where the controversy came from. You let me know when you want me to see that.
Oh, no. I mean, let's definitely go ahead and start cracking the nut real quick of this, because, sure. And a lot of people may not realize, just so you know, folks, if you don't realize and you are not familiar with the Alcubierre warp drive, we do have the Alcubierre warp drive document on here as well. You can go to that. There is gravitational waves for stable wormholes, which I think is a really, really good read and kind of primer, to some of this concept. But The really interesting thing for me going through and reading this today, and having read more of Jack Sarfati's work regarding this technology, the way I'm understanding it is, like, imagine having an air bubble trapped inside of the liquid of a straw, folks, and that air bubble is like the static field, the static gravitational electric field that you can build around something that is then movable by charge, negative void at the front to attract, you know, so you can, like, create a negative void in front of you that's basically pulling that bubble along with it inside the straw through the medium, which is why that bubble around it is what would protect any kind of craft that would be traveling at this tremendous speed or traveling at these tremendous speeds. Yeah. And that's just a dumbed down, like, hey, look, you can figure this out at McDonald's if you look at your straw, kind of physic principle.
Yeah, there's some other ways to, and not necessarily an analogous way to explain it, but there's other aspects of what happens when you're at a warp speed, so to speak, that a lot of people have misunderstood, and this is why Jack is so good at explaining some of these things when it comes to the Tic Tac. You know, what would possibly, if the Tic Tac is actually real, what could possibly be powering it? All of these different things that he can actually come up with the math and make it, you know, the beautiful science behind it. Whereas, you know, I'm going to try to take something complex and try to make it understandable as best I can.
Yeah.
But the way, one of the things people don't realize is that when they see the Tic Tac, you know, videos and or any UFO video for that matter, and the object makes a very abrupt turn or leaps into its whatever speed it decides to go at almost instantaneously, people think that a person could not possibly be inside there because they would be effectively liquefied. And that's not what happens inside of a warp bubble. That warp bubble effectively is an anti-gravity cavity, and inside that, you won't feel anything. It will be just normal to you because, in effect, you're not really moving. You're pulling the space around you to you.
Yeah.
It's not as if you were actually physically going there. It's a very difficult concept to put into play, but it's, you know.
I don't think it's incredibly difficult. I mean, if you have some basic understanding of special relativity,
right,
and the fact that, A, time is a construct. It is not it's not a constant. Time is not a universal constant. The speed of light is a universal constant.
Mm-hmm.
But that is a measure of distance over time.
Yeah.
And time is relative. Now, that universal constant changes to the relativity of the time around it, as will your observation of the light. Traveling at the speed of light.
But
anything going on around that bubble inside of the liquid of the straw, it's relative. The pressure of the water around that bubble is relative to what's inside that bubble.
Right. And it depends on, everything will have a different perspective based on your frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll hear that term a lot, the reference frame and what have you. Because an observation of something that you're trying to measure or something that you're observing is based, you are going to say measure it from your perspective where you are. And this is where it gets into the minutiae of how science is done and how quantum and, you know, keep in mind the general theory of relativity is kind of in battle with the quantum mechanics of the world and so forth. So it's like two competing theories when in fact people are trying to put them together and they're having a difficult time doing it. And this may very well be a step in that direction if what Sonny has done is turns out to be factually correct. There may be some scientists going back and forth between the two different, you know, belief systems, if you want to call it that, and come up with some, you know, some ways to string this together. Pun intended. So, you know, that's where I now here's what happened.
Now, the initial article, now the story was broke last June or something like that when they were at the alternative propulsion trade show, or whatever you call it. Mm-hmm. My brain's burning on that one. So that was released back then, but it didn't hit mainstream or anything like that. So Curtis over at the Debrief, he came out with an article. He had been talking to Sonny for a while and came out with the article that has created this whole brouhaha that's happened over the last week or so.
Yeah.
Now, some people may not even be aware of what's going on behind the scenes here, but there's a lot of controversy going on as to whether or not a warp bubble was actually created or an analog was created. Now, and an analog is a term in science that basically is we create something inside of say a computer or like a sample.
We created the quote working model.
Yeah. You create a working model and then you base all your experimentation based on that, because you wouldn't want to create an actual, say, black hole in your lab and then study it, because it might be a problem. So you create the working model that would actually create all of the necessary algorithms and all of the, every piece of math you want to put at it, that's how you would do it. And the computer would, basically kick you out the answers. So the way this happened was during the conversations going back and forth between Sonny and Chris, was Sonny told Chris that this had happened gave Chris the impression that it was an actual warp bubble that was created in the lab. And Chris actually sent back a message to Sonny saying, "Hey, congratulations on your analog warp bubble." And Sonny came back and said, "This is not an analog warp bubble. This is real." So, and those aren't the exact words, but it's close enough. And, so that is where Chris went down the path of the actual thought that the warp bubble was created and they had observed a warp bubble. But what actually has happened, which is a little sciencey here, but they created the mechanism, or he was able to create the predictive mechanism that would actually produce a warp bubble, meaning that if they did everything that the prediction states, meaning using this material, using this formula, all of these different things, that it would create a warp bubble, much like you would want to make cookies. You know what goes into make cookies, and you know if you had the flour and you had the milk and you had the egg and the this and the that, that eventually you would actually have a cookie based on having those ingredients. And that would be factual. So you would know, I have the correct ingredients. I can do this. Now that's what effectively they have done. They now know how to make it effectively. And that is it. So the predictive model is essentially what has been finalized and somewhat verified, not the actual warp bubble itself. So that is the story coming back from Sonny. That's from Sonny and from Chris, the two people that actually where all this comes from. But all the controversy after that was whether or not a warp bubble was created, or whether it was an analog, or whether, I mean, there's just all kinds of mystery. But from Sonny himself, I think he saw some of the letters too. Yeah, I think he saw one of the emails, basically that they created the mechanism that actually would create, it's called a predictive model, like you said, an actual warp bubble. So that's that's still a great thing. It doesn't, roll off the tongue as nice as the actual warp bubble itself, but it's pretty darn close. Hopefully that all makes sense. We still on?
Sorry about that. The experiments that they're doing in the Casimir cavities that they're creating are basically to figure out if they can create a negative charge at a distance. Pretty much. And be able to predictively do that at a set distance and at a set intensity, that kind of stuff. The introduction is pretty interesting. The literature search phase of this DARPA project discovered a numerical methods approach known as world line numerics that can only study and quantify the Casimir energy density and force. The curious aspect of this modeling approach that makes it of high interest to the DARPA project and that it predicts that there is structure or spatial variation to the negative vacuum energy density in a Casimir cavity.
Yep. So what effectively, you have a visualization of what kind of they're talking about. And this is going to be super, super basic. And I don't even claim to understand all of the physics behind it. But imagine two metal plates placed next to each other. And you wanted to create negative energy between those two plates, which would basically create the effect that they were paid to do the research to find. And so you have all these different materials that they would want to experiment with. And, what are they going to use as the plate or the anode? What are we going to call it in the middle? And essentially, where are they going to get the amount of energy necessary? So if you go back in time, back to 1994, back in 1994 is when Miguel Alcubierre created the math that created the realization that warp drive is real and is possible. The problem with his particular particular equation that he had was to achieve the speed of light, not necessarily even faster than, just to achieve the speed of light would require so much energy that there is not enough mass in the entire universe to actually get to that speed. So that was a stumbling block for him, but it did show that it was possible. It just required more than the amount of mass, because mass and energy are the same, essentially.
Sure.
And so it would require more mass than is available in the universe to do it. Now, what? Fast forward a little bit, Harold White gets involved. So you have Sonny, who is Harold White. He goes, it's confusing, I know, but I don't know where Sonny comes from. But anyway, so Sonny comes in, and Sonny is working for Eagle Works, I think it was, NASA's facility that was looking at alternative propulsion. And in doing so, he was able to actually take Miguel's Alcubierre's equation and move it forward a little bit by reducing the amount of energy or mass or energy, same thing, necessary to get a craft to move at superluminal speeds, which is, faster than the speed of light. So effectively, he went from all the mass in the universe down to maybe a tenth of the mass of the sun, down to maybe somewhere, I think now we're floating around 1,500 kilograms of mass of whatever this exotic material would be to get it to go that speed. So now it's becoming realistic. But the problem is that the actual source of the energy would be a negative energy. And that is, it doesn't exist. We know it's out there, but we just can't create it. It's kind of like creating, any anti anything. It just doesn't last long enough to actually make it useful. So that's where we're at with that. There's going to be some time going down the road that we might actually do that. Zefren Cochran may actually still be involved on April 4th of 2063. Is when he's supposed to actually create have the first warp drive available. Now, that's for all you Star Trek fans that might be listening to this. Yes, Zefren Cochran still can possibly make the craft, but that person would be born by now. Yeah, so that person is already born. So there's a Zefren Cochran out there somewhere that's going to be working on this. We'll see how that comes out.
Yeah. In a related story, though.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the Independent that I posted this last week, we actively have scientists in Spain create first ever, quote, magnetic wormhole in lab. And And when you're talking about this kind of technology, when you're talking about, like you said, the kind of energy that it would take to create this, to be able to sustain this, that is that is one of the questions that science has had for a long, long time is, would a stable wormhole be able to do something along these lines? And to know that a magnetic wormhole was just made for the first time, and this was an effect. I'm waiting for the article to finish loading, but the effect was basically the fact that they had created a monopole magnet on the opposite side of a tube.
Okay.
A monopole magnet, folks, just so you know, a magnet in nature naturally has two poles, a north and a south, two parts that oppose each other. A monopole magnet is something monopole that does not exist in nature to begin with. And the fact that one side of their tube had a negative charge and no other charge, and the other side had only positive. That's pretty phenomenal.
It opens up the realm of a lot of possibilities there. You know, if you can do it on the micro / nano scale, which is kind of where we'll go back with the Sonny White thing.
Yeah.
Then you can scale that up over time as new materials or new, technologies become available. The cool thing about, Sonny's version of a warp bubble at this point is that it does not require necessarily exotic material. And that's a huge game changer there. That to me is the biggest game changer, that we don't have to go out and create, you know, remember metamaterials is the big buzz and things like that, but, you know, and we're still waiting for those graphene batteries, which isn't really necessarily, you know, metamaterials or not. That's been around for a long time. And, you know, it's just like waiting on fusion. We've been waiting on that, but you got China creating their artificial sun and all this other stuff.
Yep.
So all these technologies are ramping up so fast that it is almost to the point, because I was talking to a scientist the other day, who, when I mentioned something to him, and I'll even tell you, Jack Sarfati didn't know about this until I told him about it. I sent him the information on Sonny White. But this other scientist that I was speaking, well-known scientist, when I was talking to him, I had said two things to him during the conversation he had heard nothing about. And what's happening is the science behind all of this new technology that's coming out, and the science and the technology is going so fast that, you know, one hand doesn't necessarily know what the other hand is doing. So one scientist may be really good at this type of metamaterial or whatever, and the other one is, you know, needs an engineer and this one. So somehow they need to get all this together so that people can quickly see the uses of where it's at. But that's where we come in. That's what's interesting. If you look around, you'll see things like Alien Scientist, who has the show that comes out with Tim Ventura. Tim Ventura hosts the Apex shows, and those are absolutely amazing because you actually talk to the people that are doing the research. So they're doing research on anti-gravity and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, people 10, 20, 30 years ago would go, wow, these people are wackadoodles, you know, and there's still some wackadoodles out there. But when it comes to anti-gravity, it is now becoming a very serious possibility that we could see some of this stuff within our lifetime. You know, warp drive, I never thought I would even think that I would see that in our lifetime. And here it is. We now have the math and the predictive model that can produce one.
Well, all of not even 6 months ago, they made the announcement that matter was made out of light at CERN. You know, I mean, that's all of five steps away from replicator. Give me an espresso.
exactly.
You know, and. Yep. And like you were saying, this is not a metamaterials situation. This is not a, you know, let's create a specified graphene lattice on the nano scale to warp light particles or ultrasound particles to achieve this end on the other end of the material. As a matter of fact, going straight to the paper itself, bringing it up on screen, the material being used to manufacture is SU8 2025 permanent epoxy negative photoresistant. After printing and curing, the cavities then undergo electrolysis plating to add a layer of silver to the outer surfaces. The right panel shows recent etching results using deep reactive ion etching equipment to etch the high aspect radio cavity planes into the silicon wafer substrate. This approach uses standard silicon dioxide wafer materials with the expectation that the final concepts will have a metallic layer added by means of evaporation. So, yeah, like, this is the exact same material in your watch, in your phone.
Everything you just said is normal stuff. It sounds really out there, but to the average person, like, what the hell is he talking about? And you basically just described evaporative depositing of material on any surface that you want, and it could be at the nanostructure level, and you have a brand new technology all of a sudden. And we're going back to the basics when you think about some of the stuff, because everything kind of seems to go full circle. We tend to go back around. Now we're back to where, you know, evaporative technologies of any dioxide on a surface of whatever material. Next thing you know, we'll have transparent aluminum. Oh, wait a second. Oh. We actually have that. That actually exists today. Who would have figured that so much from Star Trek? I mean, you know, kudos to the writers for Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry and everything.
Yeah.
For coming up with some of these terms. Now, the term warp drive didn't come from Star Trek, but it was definitely made popularized by it.
Sure. Before the introduction, they get into the construction. Would there be self-screening that occurs within the pillar that minimizes the magnitude of the negative vacuum energy density present inside the pillar, and hence the magnitude of the detectable signal? It was during the analysis process seeking to address this screening question that an unanticipated intersection with the Alcubierre metric was found.
Yep.
So
they found it by accident. Like most of the bigger discoveries, they're found by accident. Now, the weird thing is, what would be the odds of this actually occurring to Harold White? I mean, the guy is totally doing something else, and boom, he discovers something he's been working on a long time, but doing an experiment on something that has nothing to do with warp drive. So pretty interesting.
Yeah. It has almost nothing to do with the actual research he is getting funded to do.
Yeah. I wonder if he planned it that way. Maybe he thought in the background, he's thinking, you know what, if I could just get a few more dollars.
Well, you know, and that's part of what we'll be getting into in the next segment whenever we come back from commercial here in about 15 minutes is, you know, what if, because that is one of the things that we have held and that I even discussed with Jack Sarfati when he was on and Jack Sarfati, folks, just so you know, like he will not stray from topic.
No.
Like he ain't straying from topic. He ain't conjecturing. He ain't hypothesizing with you. He's just going to answer the question that he came to answer. And whenever I brought up the fact of, you know, what if this technology, what if these things were there as a means of, as we've said before, kind of declassifying the tape, because they just announced that they are making a branch to reverse engineer technology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like that was announced all of two or three days ago.
Which basically means they've had that for however long. I mean, we know how the government works. I mean, they think they can hoodwink us all the time, but I think it's like, we've got you figured out now. The moment you tell us that you're going to create something, we know that you've already had it for 20 years. It's just now, Yeah, you're just now creating the excuse to show it. That's
Well, because once again, like I've said, I mean, number one, it was a few years ago that I remember the head of Lockheed Martin and one of the a great scientist in the realm of material science talking on my stage about how Moore's law would be collapsing in the next 6 months. And that was about 3-4 years ago almost. Yep.
And that's what happened.
We are to that point. And the only way that if we have recovered technology that is being used in these programs, that is being used in other technology that is coming about, the only way is to let it be known. That's the only way to move forward, because there will be a magical, magical leap.
Mm-hmm. And if there is disclosure to be had, it should be done during a technological progression. Someone should come out and just say, hey, we can't explain how we went from, it's like going from fission to fusion. You know, it's like if we could do that in a week, that would have been really cool. We've been working on that for 60, 70, 80 years.
Well, since we cracked the atom.
Yeah, exactly. Since we cracked the atom, the first thing is like, hey, we cracked it. Now let's see if we can put it back together again and see if we can create energy that way. Well, of course you can. You know, then there may be a third way. Who knows? But that type of disclosure is something I'm longing for. I mean, everyone, and you, people know me as a skeptic, a debunker, or whatever you want to call me sometimes. But the only reason why I do that is because if there's going to be some sort of disclosure, I just want to make sure that I'm actually, that it's the real thing, you know, that it has to be able to withstand scrutiny after scrutiny after, I mean, it's got to withstand it. And so far we haven't had that yet, but of course people will swear that this video or this or that proves it, but it just really hasn't done that yet. Man, I want it so bad.
Same here. And you know me, we've had our private conversations. We have shared beers in this studio off the microphone. And I am a believer beyond believers, Mike. But because I'm a believer beyond believers, my realm of proof has to be greater than my want of proof. Had like it is necessary that it's greater than.
And it should be. And it should be with basically everyone. Everyone should.
With all science, it should be.
Everyone should. I think so. If you follow the scientific method, or if you want to call it that, and you have Carl Sagan's famous words, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and as such, it makes sense. If someone walks up to you and says, "Hey, man, there is a UFO that just landed down the street at the Circle K grocery store," blah blah blah, I'd be like, "Uh huh, yeah, okay, sure." You know, but then if I turned and if they walked away and I turned around and I saw this object take off from the Circle K, I'd be like, wow, I should have listened to that person.
Yeah.
So we, at this point, we don't know what person or what video or which story or which experience is the actual one. And because we've been disappointed so many times in the past. I mean, God, even the Travis Walton story. I mean, come on. And you know, I'm just like, nobody better touch Barney and Betty Hill or I'm going to throw it out. Because that story is the first story I remember hearing and going, wow, that's amazing. You know, and now it's nothing. That story is like a low on the scale of all the weird stuff we've heard.
Which is really wild. And I'm getting ready to actively contact Kathleen Martin, who is related to Barney and Betty Hill, and works with MUFON. And, you know, whenever you go through the Barney and Betty Hill story, man, some of the stuff like there were parts of a star map that she talked about that didn't even exist yet. We hadn't even discovered that part of a star system yet. And she was describing it in detail from a map that she was shown. That kind of stuff.
And they didn't have any foreknowledge of any of that stuff to begin with. It's not like a Bob Lazar story where, somebody could say, hey, well, Bob, you could predict element 115 because that would be after 112, 113. Yeah, it was going to be a 115. Yeah, but at the same time, You want these to be real. And if they are, it's just like following a false god, so to speak. You know, you don't want to do that. You want to just make certain it's absolute is. But there's people that are in the know.
Yeah.
That are also telling us and feeding us things that are not necessarily exactly correct either. It's very frustrating. It's almost as bad as the damn hoax I did that I'm still paying for. But it's a nightmare, man. But I have learned a valuable lesson there, man, I tell you. But
Well, yeah. And, you know, I think that is a great point for us to kind of give our listeners a little bit of a break for a couple minutes, let them digest the information that we've given them about the warp bubble, about Alcubierre warp drive, for them to go download documents, that kind of stuff for their own reading. And when we come back from this quick break, just about 3 minutes, folks, we'll get into what we were literally just talking about, this information/disinformation campaign. How these things are coming out and just bits and pieces, little bitty things that, man, even if you go back and started doing searches in the Dudes and Beer group for articles, I guarantee you would find them, folks. So when we come back, we're going to be talking about exotic technologies, how they're covered by the media, how they are released by the media, how these announcements happen, how announcements like the UAP announcement by Lou Elizondo happens, and yet still he not only maintains his clearance, but also grabs and nabs a brand new contract with the government to explore the same thing. We'll be getting into that and so much more when we come back from this quick commercial break. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies. Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultational workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com.
With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Are back, folks, and welcome back. Man, I love our new commercials. They're so nice. The loops, the goodness. Welcome to the all-new Curious Realm. I mean, it's been a long time coming. It's been a lot of production on my end, a lot of back doors and secret things and hiding things from my wife so that she doesn't, like, leak them to somebody. And not that she ever would, but, you know. Just so it's mysterious. It's kind of creepy in the house. Speaking of creepy in the house, we're welcoming back Mike Turber for this second part of the show to talk about media coverage, how the media deals with these things, how the media goes about covering these topics. Because one of the reasons we cover this kind of stuff, and there are other shows that do it, of course, you know, there's the famous Coast to Coast and the just less famous Clive Lewis and you know, stuff like that. But the whole reason I do it is the open conversation, the conversations that we have on social media with our fans, with our listeners, with our social media family, with folks like you, stuff like that, Mike, because it's one thing to just have authors on. Mm-hmm. And talk about their books. I think it's another thing to have people like you on, to have people like Dr. John Hall on, to have people like Billy Joe Kane on, talking about targeted individuals, that kind of stuff, to get into the nitty gritty, to take questions from people, to you know, talk about this fringe science in the light of popular media.
Yeah, and to actually help people that are, you know, that are involved in whatever it is that's happening to them or what have you. I think one time we were on and a woman came on and had some very serious things that were happening to her.
Yeah.
It was nice to be able to walk her through, you know, some of the situation that she was experiencing and to help her out. You know, that to me makes it all the worthwhile. You know, it's not like we're in it for the money. I can.
Yeah. I am far from getting rich off of it. I can tell you that. Because I love it. And because my whole life has been spent in search of knowledge. And I have to honestly give props to my mom at this point, because it's because of her. Not necessarily judging me whenever I would bring books. I think she was just happy that I was reading books. But my brother would bring like two or three novels home from the library, and I would bring books home in seventh and eighth grade on like how to build lasers. I absolutely did not understand all of that science, but what I was getting was the principle of how a laser worked in seventh grade. That kind of stuff and just utter nerdy things like rocketry and, you know, ancient mysteries and that kind of stuff.
Growing up, I could not read a novel to save my life. I could not follow the characters and, you know. So I ended up on the nonfiction side, and I was memorizing all kinds of weird, obscure, like crazy, trivial things that people just would be like, why do you even know this? You know, but that for me was the thing. And Guinness Book of World Records, the World Almanac, the Encyclopedia Britannica, that, you know, we had like a third generation hand-me-down that had all the information in, but you know, it was still amazing. And my closet was like where I was, that was it. You know, it's like, hey, Mike's in the closet. But no, you know, that was like my little space away from space. You know, I'd get in there. And that was my comfort zone, you know, and I would just read. Then people that my mom, we'd go somewhere. She said, ask him a question, ask him anything, you know, and then they asked me, I remember I was at a store in Kansas, and it was so funny. The guy says, how do you pronounce the capital of Florida? You pronounce it Miami or you pronounce it Miami? I said, you pronounce it Tallahassee.
Yeah,
and right. I'm like, but he didn't know I'm from Tallahassee, so it was kind of funny. Got him.
Well, let's start kind of unwrapping how these things are covered by media and how they lead to the raging debates that are going on right now. Like that article I was mentioning earlier from Big Think. I wrote the book on warp drive. Yeah. No, we did not accidentally create a warp bubble. And what's funny is that the same former NASA engineer who previously claimed to violate Newton's law is now claiming to have made a warp bubble. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he claimed to make a warp bubble.
No, he didn't. It's just the way Chris kind of worded it. It did give the impression that it was a warp bubble.
Yes.
Plus, Sonny has to take blame for it, too, because the words that Sonny said to Chris on the email were that he even, you know, brought in ex-presidents and stuff. Mm. He's like, he's trying to explain to Chris, yes, we created a warp bubble. And that, you know, Chris was like, you know, keep in mind, Chris is a comedian. He's not a scientist. He's actually a comedian. But he's got obviously a passion for science. He does a wonderful job and he does pretty good writing. And he was trying to be very accurate. And I could tell that he had a lot of passion into this article, because the way he was talking about it. And as he expressed how Sonny said something to him, you could tell that it was almost verbatim how it came out.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the way media handles things, and this isn't about Chris anymore. We're kind of like expanding as well beyond this scope, is all of the different, technologies and things like this that are the more bizarre it is or the more unbelievable it is, the bigger press it's going to get. But the things that will help us on a day-to-day basis, the next technology that's really going to do this or that, sometimes those are kind of put by the wayside. And then you go to the store and you see this item sitting there and you're wondering, where did this come from? And it's like, well, because, you know, it's like the graphene batteries that we, you know, everyone's waiting on. They're now being produced. You know, things like that. I mean, just, we have the technology to create electric cars that could just basically run for years without ever needing anything. But there's a reason to suppress it. I get that. I don't agree with it, but I get it. But there's also the other end of the spectrum, and the media plays those sides. The good thing I like about media is that some of them don't get into the politics of it.
Yeah.
That's the media I like to read, like the actual science journals and actually, you know, the reading the papers from the scientists themselves, not the interpretation of the paper based on who owns the paper, Jeff Bezos, things like that, you know.
So, why don't you obscure the name a little bit for us, Mike?
I was reading an email with because Jack had this email thing and we sent out, and of course Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are part of the email, and I know they're not going to respond to it, but I'm sitting there reading some of the things Jack is saying, and it's so funny. He's funny in his in a intellectual way, and he's funny in a childlike way at the same time. It's really hard to place it. I think you kind of tapped on it a little bit earlier, that he is so on subject that you can't waver him off, that you can just have all kinds of jokes running around him, and you wouldn't even know you're doing.
His non-response is the funniest part.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's almost how you know he got it.
Yeah, or if the subject wavers away from, like if there's multiple people on a show and the subject kind of wavers away from something he's interested in, you'll see him like shut down, like Data's, like from Star Trek, they push the button, I was like, and then when physics this or that comes back up, he wakes back up and he's done. He's on fire.
Well, but just to loop it back, it's okay. Your experience in the world of intelligentsia and stuff like that, my experience in the world of media on both the local side as well as the alternative side, and what I've done with this show, even you get a different set of skills for reading. And for not necessarily reading between the lines, but reading beyond the print. And especially whenever a lot of people in the Dudes and Beer group, the Curious Realm group on Facebook, will regularly be like, oh man, you posted this earlier from somebody else. And I'm like, yep. And I'm posting it from these people, because that's called confirmation. When you see me posting it from two or three different groups or two or three different, two or three different verified sources, people like National Geographic, that kind of stuff.
It's like watching the difference between Fox News and CNN on the political front. It's just like with the Kyle, trial that we just went through, and you turn the channel. It's like getting two completely different news stories. And so having multiple perspectives, even though they're talking about the same thing, for the most part in science, they pretty much stick to the script as to whatever the press release was that the organization that found this new scientific discovery or technology or whatever. They generally stick to that. But every now and then you can see they waver off into their own little take on it, and a lot of it has to do with the author, whoever actually is writing it. But for the most part, you start to see a little pattern. But like you were saying, is that whenever you read something and you go to read beyond the lines, not between the lines, but beyond the lines to see where this is going. What is this person? Sometimes you wonder why they even are working on a certain technology to begin with. And then you see the bigger picture of it, spelled out to you by other scientists that are way out there. Because we like the way out there guys. The everyday scientist is kind of cool. I need my cold medicine. Yeah, thank you. But we're looking for like the cure of blah, 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 that kind of thing. And those scientists are fun to listen to because they're always on that fringe. They're always, on the edge. And that's where I like to live.
Yeah. Same here. Just the other day, there was somebody who, is a casual listener, not really one of the hardcore community members, but asked about an article that I posted. And I was like, my curiosities know no bounds. And I am not afraid to read an article. I'm not afraid to read something out there that is out there and that might be out there. Because what if? Now, granted, my alarms will go off. My red flags will raise. I will double, triple check information sources. All that kind of good stuff. But will that stop me from reading something? No. Good God, man. I can't even imagine how confused some algorithms get whenever I hit accept all cookies to look at something, like the ad algorithms just must go nuts. Like, I don't even know where to pull things from.
At bras? I don't remember looking at bras.
Oh, no. I posted one on my Facebook page not too long ago that was like, yo, man, I look at a lot of things, but that ain't one of them. I don't know what the heck that is. And that was like an ad for something for sale on Facebook. I was like, yo, that is, I don't know what that is, but that looks highly inappropriate.
Yeah, it's gotten creepy. I think there's somewhere down the line it's gotten predictive because I was going to look for something.
Oh, yeah.
And then an ad for it popped up and I was creeped out. I was like, I'm calling Zuckerberg right now because there's no way. It's like a magic trick. You know, it's like somebody predicted something.
Yeah.
And what it was a tactical style flashlight. That I literally had thought about it and like 20 minutes later, boom,
well,
there's an ad.
And that kind of stuff definitely exists. I mean, heck, I remember one of the first Black Hat conferences I worked back in like 2011, 2010. There was a former, head of technology for the FBI that was there saying that 5 to 6 years ago, they had predictive algorithms that could tell them exactly where you would be within a quarter mile radius 15 minutes from now.
Yep. The predictive.
Now, that would have been like 2008, 2009, maybe slightly before cell phone technology. So I can't even imagine now. I can't
even
with the accuracy that it has now and with the data that we give them now and everything else.
They need that metadata. That metadata gives them the data.
It's huge. It's huge.
Yep.
And,
absolutely.
You know, I think that's just it. You know, science is the darling of the media.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Good science is sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Real science is not. Real science, the nuts and bolts, the down in the dirt, somebody digging, not sexy, not sexy.
No.
The 28 months of grant work that it took for somebody to find a tiny piece of amber with a piece of flesh inside of it, not sexy.
Yep. Nope.
But
it's just like so much of life, like in some of the things that I do, I mean, people look at some of the investigations that I've done and they're like, wow, that must be so interesting. It's 95% really boring, 95% research and literally just looking. And then that 5% or that 4%, because you got that 1% that's really bad.
Yeah.
That 4 or 5% of that time that's so exciting makes it all worth it.
Yeah,
it really does. It really does. But I get the meaning and the sentiment behind what you're saying, and I think over time, as we progress towards the future, and we look back and we think, "Wow, what got me here?" and then realize, "Well, what got me here is all this predictive technology and this predictive algorithms put me here." So maybe not so much they're trying to predict where you're going. They might be actually producing information that you see subliminally or whatever that puts you where they want you to be.
Yeah. Or that put you onto the page to buy the flashlight that they got a deal on right now. That they got a 20% better margin on.
Yeah. But then you look at, that's somebody trying to sell me something. Then you look at Zuckerberg and the Facebook, algorithms that they have and YouTubes and Googles and blah, 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 all these different algorithms. Are they slowly, like the ads that I see or the videos that are suggesting to me, are they actually suggesting things to me to make me go a certain route? Or are they one way is passive, the other way is active. Is it passively doing this?
The answer is yes.
Yes, no matter which one.
Yes. because this is what the whistleblower came out and said. This is what studies had said, all kinds of stuff. And never, ever forget, like, yes, I'm live on Facebook right now, folks. I use Facebook. I leverage Facebook. However, I'm firmly willing to admit what Facebook is and the fact of any data I give them, what it's used for. Now, with that being said, the consternation that you see, the nitpicking back and forth between people, stuff like that, that is the money generator. And never forget, when Facebook started, it was a what's hot, what's not on campus. In order to connect with somebody, you had to go to college with them.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have gone to college with them in order to connect with them originally. So it's a what's hot, what's not. And that algorithm of what's hot, what's not has never, ever, ever changed. Ever.
It's like the first video on YouTube, I think, was the elephant video, if I remember correctly. And, as they got into the part of deciding which things to show to you, and whoever's sitting down there developing these algorithms, okay, so let's do this, let's try this to see how this works. Well, obviously, the big guys on the block, the Googles and the YouTube, and which is obviously Google, and Facebook and so forth, they basically did something in such a way that we somehow allowed so much of our information to just go to them, because we kind of like we're okay with it. We're like, okay, yeah, no problem.
Well, yeah,
like,
we can remember MySpace to the system.
Remember MySpace didn't do any of this. No. It was like, we're gonna stick to the tried and true, and we're not gonna manipulate and blah blah blah. You create your own little world. That's what MySpace was about, was that you created your own little world in your space.
Yeah.
And then Facebook comes along, and we're all looking at it, and it's structured, and it's everything has a certain way and flow and stuff like this. And it's kind of like the LinkedIn versus Craigslist. Craigslist had its own appeal, but LinkedIn was like all organized. That's the way Facebook seemed as compared to MySpace. And people were at first were like going, who'd want to go over there? It's like old people would only go there, but now everyone's there.
Well, and listener Ryan Milios just commented, DARPA's life log went offline the day Facebook went online. And one of the things that we talk about regularly on this show, never forget, one of the initial rounds of funding before Facebook went public came from InQtel, which is the financial arm of investment in technologies by the CIA. And if you remember, one of the first huge news stories about Facebook was the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah.
It was, hey, let's free Egypt, everybody. And they never did find the dude that owned that Facebook account. They never did actually find the guy that said, let's all go to the town square and overthrow this thing, guys. We can do this. One of the first viral happenings on this platform was the overthrow of a government.
Yep.
And we tend to just totally glaze that and forget it. Anybody remember the live action kidnappings, like straight up Sicario situations that were going on? It was like reality TV movies. It was crazy, man. You had people kidnapping folks live on Facebook, murdering people, raping people, stuff like that.
And that for Facebook was I mean, they had to shut it down and stuff like this, but it was not necessarily a negatively impactful thing. It's like
we're still streaming here.
Yep. And you got. People probably, one of the guys I investigated was a guy, his name was Josh. I'll just use his first name. Mm. He actually was streaming live his car chase, his police car chase. And my girlfriend at the time, she says, well, if you're so good, why don't you stop this guy? The guy was in Hawaii, right?
Yeah.
And so I ended up contacting the guy, during this, and stopping all the stuff that was going on, and becoming really good friends with him and his mom and so forth. And Shana, if you're out there, hello. And all of these different things. And as you go back and I start thinking about this, wow, they don't really, I don't have that feeling anymore of that. It seems like this is more, constructed for me, kind of like a certain movie that was out a while back.
As though it's curated just for you.
Yeah, just for me. And see, you have your, what you see is for you. And so your experience, although overall is the same, it's unique to you. And I think that's where the money's at. That's where they pull you in, and that's where the MySpace failed. That's where any other site that was like that kind of failed. That's where the Craigslist's are failing. You know, they're not.
Yeah. And that's what they showed, was the fact that, like, people put it, and the fact that the posts that were causing conflagration between people were being boosted by the algorithm, were being pushed to the front of people's timelines who were friends.
Yeah.
And were of different mindset.
Before, you're like, why is this on my timeline? I don't know this person, but it was creating enough.
But a friend of yours was friends with him, and because of the conflagration going on, and because of the conflagration that you had with your friend about the same topic, that popped up on your thing to get more conflagration, to get that more stuff, so that it could sell more ads, because that feed now has more action on it, and because of that, now we got this person's data and that person's data and that person's data and that person's data, and now we can put 85 different ads on this thread that these people will be much more likely to click on. And it's really that 1980s just say no commercial of, I work harder so I can buy more cocaine, so I can work harder, so I can make more money, so I can buy more cocaine, so I can work harder, so I can make more money, so I can buy more cocaine. And once again, Ryan Milios hopped in with, or that Pokemon Go game where you had to go out and find stuff was probably a good way for the CIA to track the movements of people. Oh, beyond that, Ryan, you gave it access to your camera, dude. You were actively giving them a live 3D map of the entire area around you. Like, grandma's, if they don't need a warrant to go into grandma's basement, they put a Charizard there and little Timmy went and gave them the map.
And you get your little augmented reality thing going on there, and then somebody else is watching with
you. And don't forget, Niantic Soft, funded by InQtel. They got their initial round of funding from InQtel. So this is all stuff like that. It's no tinfoil hat. I'd love to say that it's some kind of uber conspiratorial way of thinking, but this is all stuff that is publicly available and public knowledge.
What does Facebook change its name to?
Meta.
Duh. Is that not like telling you in your face, we want your metadata? We're going to change our name from Facebook. We don't want your face. We want your meta. That's what we want, because that's how we make money. And they just name it Meta. It's like, and everybody's like going like, well, that's a strange name. I just can't really get into that. I'm like, do you realize what that word truly means? It's almost like an in your face kind of thing. It's like Zuckerberg saying, okay, you're going to accuse me of it? Sure. Well, I'll just rename the company it. How's that?
Yeah. I'll just be straight up with it.
That just blew my mind. I'm like going, wow, they're just actually going to name the company exactly the word pretty much that they're being accused of giving everybody as our metadata. And that's it. And they're like, in your face. Okay. Yep. No problem. I don't know if you looked at it the same way I did, but that's exactly the way I looked at it. So, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a great way to look at it, because a lot of people forget that kind of stuff, Mike.
Yeah.
A lot of people forget that even looking at articles, even outside of a social media platform, those cookies are still followed. Those things are still followed. Those things are still tracked. I remember it was many, many years ago, probably about 5-6 years ago now, almost. My wife and I, about almost 5 years ago, because she was pregnant. It was about 4 months before she gave birth. And I remember we were walking in Vegas through the Palazzo complex, and went past this little bakery. And at the time I was hosting Dudes and Beer, and there was this little bar before we went outside. To go across the airwalk to the other side of the strip. And I was like, you know, I've considered coming here and doing a Dudes and Beer Live. I should come by and talk to the manager. That's all I did. I had never visited their Facebook page. I had never looked them up on social media. I had never visited their website, nor looked them up online. My wife and I walked the strip. We went up to Caesar's. We came back through the same entrance. And as I passed that exact same bar, my phone went off with an alert saying that they had liked the Dudes and Beer page on Facebook.
Nice.
As I passed that bar.
Trippy!
So yeah, that's how deep the metadata goes. That's how deep.
Yep. Back when I was doing the Las Vegas investigation, on the back of the receipt that you get when you get your room, if you your little room key holder thing, whatever you want to call it, it actually states that the room key and or any other anything issued by them, meaning your membership card to their players thing, is a trackable device.
Yep.
And you agree, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm reading this. I'm like, wow, that's like in your face. But when I asked them about it, they said, oh, it's so we can tell if we need to move like certain slot machines to certain locations if people have a tendency. You know, I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I get it. And they're probably part of it, but that definitely is. I mean, they're tracking everything. At all times, it's an amazing amount of data. Bluffdale, Utah, you know, is probably already blown out as far as their servers are concerned. That's where, you know, obviously NSA puts the gist of what they were collecting.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got Snowden. Snowden is still sitting over there just waiting to come back. We got Assange. You got all of these people.
Assange sadly just suffered a stroke.
Oh, no, did he?
Yeah, just a couple days ago. After they found out that, oddly enough, the day after it was found out that he could be extradited to the United States, he suffers a stroke. I don't think Ed Snowden is ever coming home. I don't think that is in the cards. Period. I think he gave up entirely too much. And there's a conference that I work every year that will remain nameless, that I go and work in my industry that, hey, we don't even have presentations at this conference because,
what do you do? Sit there and stare at each other?
people like Snowden. Oh, they got speakers and stuff, but there ain't no PowerPoints going out.
No, there ain't
PowerPoints up on screen. They'll put a logo up, whatever, but they ain't got no PowerPoints anymore.
I love those undergrounds.
And, you know, it's just one of those that, these things are there. These things exist. And, whenever you look at things like Operation Mockingbird, feel free to go check the declassified documents section on Curious Realm, folks. You can find a copy of Operation Mockingbird and read it. That was basically the CIA plan to plant plants in the media and to have the media push propagandized stories. And oddly enough, before President Obama left office in his final NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, what decides black budgets, things like that, what decides DARPA program budgets, that kind of stuff. Within there was a budget for the Office of Anti-Propaganda Propaganda.
The anti.
Now, you can phrase that with as many antis as you like. It's still the last word, which is propaganda.
Exactly. It's all propaganda, no matter what.
And when you're talking about an office of anti-propaganda, that means that the job at the Office of Anti-Propaganda is to
produce propaganda.
To call the news and tell them the way it is.
Yep. It's like
no matter
radio
what,
shows.
Their job is still to call the news and tell them the way it is. So, still propaganda.
Except for Walter Cronkite, he was, and that's the way it was.
Well, and you know, Brian Williams, I should have played that audio tonight, but Brian Williams just went out with like this, America is on fire and we're all inside of it.
Yeah.
Like, he just retired with this cryptic statement of like, America is not the America it once was. It's different. And to an extent, that's true. And believe me, I hold faith in humanity. I hold faith in people. I hold faith in our government as an overarching entity of people. And the fact of we, the people, like we, less than 20% of people took on the British government and won. So I think truth will prevail. These things will prevail, Mike.
I agree. And it may take some time or what have you, but at the same time, we all sit back and we hope in one hand and wish in the other.
Is that the word?
Yeah, it's one of them. Operation Wish.
That's the turn of phrase I've heard.
Wish. Yeah. So you sit there and you go, wow, okay, it's a wish. And there's similar letters in there. So I think three of the four letters are the same.
Yeah.
But, you know, so you look at this and your mind is saying, okay, someone in there, I have to have some trust in this because someone is going to be watching over this. It's like, we hope this is the case, and sometimes we have to wait a little longer. But those people are the Assanges. Those people are the Snowdens these people. And they are being whisked away, or they're whisked away themselves because they know the repercussions of staying where they are. I'll never forget the phone call I got from Assange's – I can't remember the Secretary of Assange back when they were calling around to people that they knew, that they felt they trusted or whatever, where they created 11 or 15, however many files it was, of backups. And you may remember this back before they made it where the backups are there all the time. But they wanted to put them in different servers around the world, so if they went down, that they would have the backups in people that they trusted hands. And then this girl calls me with a British accent, and the next day, she says, okay, well, Mr. blah, blah, blah will be calling you tomorrow. I didn't even hear what she said. And then the next day I get this phone call and it's her. And then she puts someone on the phone and I'm listening and not even paying attention because I had a customer there. And next thing you know, I'm like, well, I'm being transferred the entire contents of WikiLeaks to hold on to. And I just felt really weird about that. This is like 2002, whenever it was. It was very early on, back when they were, you know, the first rounds of them being taken down. But, you know, that was a weird, honorable, awesome, you know, situation. But at the same time, it was pretty scary. It was like, wait a second. You know, and that was back when I had wowing.com, WOW versus World 11. And, you know, you think about all of the different things that have gone on in just our lifetimes or just in the last few years.
Yeah.
That the conversations we had 5 years ago, 10 years ago, there's some commonality there. But at the same time, our opinions of different things have shifted. I remember when I first started talking to you, your perspective on UFOs and on paranormal and stuff like this, it's slightly different than it is now. And mine is too. I mean, both of it has changed. But the question is, has our opinions on this changed due to our own actions and our own research and our own opinions? Or just like you said earlier, is this being done for us? Are we being manipulated in such a subliminal way that we don't even know what's happening? And is this the coup de grace, is this absolutely the pinnacle of propaganda, is the art of doing it without doing it?
Yeah, precisely. The art of the gentle persuasion, the art of the persuasion where somebody doesn't even know it's happening. And I think that, and we've talked about it before. I don't know how much I would love to interview Lou Elizondo. I would love to interview, because until I hear somebody's voice, until I see their face, until I talk to them, I can't really gauge necessarily. I can watch clips all day long, stuff like that. But I just find some of the circumstances behind the story.
Mm-hmm.
That does not discount anybody's recollection of events. That does not discount the opinions of Kevin Day and the experiences of Kevin Day. That does not discount the experiences of the pilots who saw and recorded things.
Exactly.
What I am calling into question is the actions of Lou Elizondo and the motivations behind them. And
in
just
my conversations with him, I've lost a lot of, I remember in the beginning, I think you and I both were like all into it, and wow, they just, sitting there waiting for the next morsel of information to come out of there. We got the three videos. Okay, when is more going to come out? Blah, 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 and all of this different stuff. And then I started thinking, going back and looking at this in a different light. And of course, I have a completely different perspective on this because of things I've done and done since, obviously.
Sure.
But at the same time, the feeling that you have about Lou Elizondo, if we talked about this a year ago, would be completely different. Even though a year ago he and I had this huge, well, not huge, we had this nice little argument about go fast or whatever.
Mm.
And I just like, wow, he's not going to answer this question. He just will. And then I figured, let me ask SCE, let me ask Robert Powell this question. He won't answer it either. No one will answer this question. And it got compounded. Mick West asked the same question. I asked the same question. And man, it just went south. And I'm like, okay, there's something else going on here. There's something else going on behind the scenes. You see it. I see it. I just want to know what it is or why it is. I don't even care what it is. I just want to know why it is. Is there something wrong? There's something wrong. I mean, keep in mind, him and Chris had left TTSA. I'm sure there's some other, their claim was that TTSA was not going the direction that they felt that they wanted to take this particular subject matter in, and they decided to leave to do whatever they're doing now. And my hat's off to them.
Sure.
If they did more in like a year of the UFO topic has probably ever been done in all time. So kudos for that. But did they do it on the backs of the three videos? Did they do it on the backs of something that pretty much can be, I don't want to use even the word debunk, but just things like go fast is easy. An easy one to say, you know what? Boom. Go fast is a balloon. It's at 13,200 feet and it's going only 40 miles an hour or something along those lines. And to look at that and to see them still after being asked about it and being asked, show us the math on it that you guys are using because everybody else is getting a different number here. And then you get nothing as a response, like literally no response other than you don't know what you're talking about. Your math is wrong, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, well, that's confusing to me. I want that to open transparency. And that's where this UFO topic needs to go. It needs to be fully open where, because we're not stupid. If you've got something, show it. Don't hold it back. It's not worth it at this point. You're really just playing with everyone. It's almost like the government's playing games with us. TTSA is playing games with us. Lou Elizondo is playing games with us. What is your overall thought in that particular spectrum?
Well, I mean, quite honestly, we've had the conversations privately. I've had the conversations on this show. Yeah. I am a big believer. Number one, Space Force is nothing new.
Right.
Nothing new. I think that the announcement of Space Force in the wake of this announcement, as well as all this technology. I mean, don't forget, folks, while we're talking about these things going these speeds, stuff like that, we're simultaneously talking about weapon systems that target hypersonic missiles, hypersonic technology, hypersonic drones, stuff like that. Things that China has tested, works. Now, can they deploy it from space?
Yeah.
We're talking about the same thing from Russia. So I don't think any of that is technology that is beyond the scope of what we have military-wise that has already been, I mean, even the fact of what we've talked about before, Mike, where are the videos that we are seeing a test of the infrared laser system, the infrared holograph chaff system that was made and installed in F-18 Hornets. That was made to make something brighter on a FLIR camera, moving faster with a higher heat signature than an F-18 in a targeted place.
Yep, and I can tell you straight up, when I contacted, and people are saying, you haven't contacted Raytheon, you haven't contacted Mercury Systems, you're lying. And I'm like, no, I'm not, and I can't absolutely prove it. Number one, when I contacted Mercury Systems and I asked about the DRFM technology and whether or not the Navy used it, the guy was point of fact without even hesitation.
Yep.
He says, not only do they use it, but that's exactly what happens when they're doing the Red Team events. The Red Team actually uses our DRFM technology. And he almost like blurted it out that what we're seeing in the 2015 Roosevelt incident, it's simply most of their DRFM technology. And if Ryan Graves says that they've seen these things every day for over 2 years, every day for over 2 years.
Yeah.
And they have no more information. They weren't able to intercept anything, not get better video, all of these different things that we're having to deal with. And then people are like, well, maybe they did get better video. They just don't show it to us. Okay. Yeah. I don't think so, because the pilots would be talking about that, you know, not the researchers, the pilots would be. And that causes cause of alarm for me is I can't sit here and go, you know, I feel very confident about our military allowing these things to fly in our, you know, with impunity in our airspace, blah, 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 and not be able to do more than what they've done. It's just like the Chad Underwood video of the Tic Tac. If that Tic Tac was such a curiosity and it was only flying at, say, 200-300 knots, just like he was, why didn't he catch up and get better video? Why didn't he kind of like scramble after or whatever? Where was that?
If there was an incursion into U.S. airspace by something, why at the very least for these pilots that were out on a routine training mission? Because pretty sure, and I mean, you've been in the Air Force, you've been in the military, you could probably tell me more about this than I actually know. But to my knowledge, there are at least two armed airplanes on any carrier at any time ready to scramble for action.
They could up on the rails, but even then they were so close to Miramar and San Diego that they could easily have land-based stuff take off that covers that area anyway for a scramble situation. But and this was over a period of 10 days, so it wasn't like they weren't ready for it. It was like 7 days sees these objects, five at a time. Okay. Yeah. Now I have my theory about what they are. I have the data to back up what I believe they are. I have not released that data yet. People are mad at me for not doing that. I will give it to you tonight. You will have the exact same data that I have. You can look at it and tell me what you think, because I have the NASA data on the X-43, things I told you about. So I'll send you that. I'll send you the same email. You'll see, you'll read everything that I said between me and NASA and me and Edwards Air Force Base. I'll let you read it all. Okay. And then you make your opinion on what you think you're looking at without me influencing you at all, other than you reading the emails that I sent.
Yeah.
You know, so when you look at this, I start to wonder, okay, we're being played or something's going on. You know, where does this end? You know, why is it that these objects can, invade our airspace, so to speak, and all we do is fly around leisurely at X number of miles an hour and we don't go after them? And I don't want to discount any live, testimony of a pilot or a testimony of Kevin Day or anyone for that matter.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, because I believe that they believe that what they saw was exactly what they saw. And I have no issue with that at all. Nothing I'm saying does. But based on when I looked at the videos and based on just the videos, we're being told it's almost like somebody's trying to Jedi mind trick me into believing that something in that video occurred that didn't occur.
Yeah.
And that's why you have one faction that, you know, looks at the debunked video and they go, well, okay, it really didn't shoot off to the left. It was a zoom and blah, blah, blah. And that's the answer for that. And then you have the other side that looks at the exact same video and comes up with something different. Then you have SCU comes in and does their scientific analysis of it. And the outlandish numbers that they come out with, in my opinion, that are just wrong, almost makes me wonder, okay, is this a coordinated event between certain entities to have this pseudo-scientific, you know, entity come up and validate this stuff? They validated Aguadilla. You know, Aguadilla, the Chinese lanterns that are floating around. I don't know, dude. I just don't. And I know probably in some of the stories that I just touched on, you and I have very different opinions about what we are looking at. And I completely respect that.
I don't think that we have opinions that differ too far from each other, Mike.
Right.
We've talked about the facts of the case. Whenever you talk about the facts of the case, the USS Nimitz, once again, I will not discount what any pilot has seen. I will not discount what any radar operator has seen. I will not discount what Kevin Day has seen. However, when you look at the circumstances of those days, not just day, but days, why was nothing scrambled?
Yeah.
Not and once, not November twice, 10th. But thrice. Why was data taken from U.S. Navy planes by U.S. Air Force personnel? Why were they even allowed on the deck of a U.S. Navy aircraft carrier, much less to touch the black boxes and take the data recorders from those aircraft? Unless it's the fact of it is a known test. Because once again, even Kevin Day, all those kind of guys, like, hey, these tests are like real world scenario. They do not jack around with them. This is not something that they would be like testing unknown to them. They also wouldn't be allowing them on deck to take the friggin' black boxes unbeknownst to them either.
Exactly. So that's where you and I have see it the same way. I'm sitting there going, yes, I agree that this is not normal, that they would not do this type of testing and create this environment, which would have a safety issue. And I get that.
Yeah.
But if the safety issue is on things that are not real, and then because I've been out on Tyndall Air Force Base watching, way back when F-4 Phantoms are going off and going after drones. These are live drones, actually planes, that are being flown remotely that they go out and attack. That's dangerous. But these things are sometimes our blip on a screen. It's DRFM, digital radio frequency memory. And I'm thinking that if this can be done, and people are saying, but he saw it with his own eyes. Yes, I know. But if you piece it together, if you put a person in a mindset that what they're seeing is this, and then next thing they do, they watch a video and they go, yeah, it looked just like that. Chad Underwood's video does not really look like, you know, a tic tac. When you first look at it, it's not a tic tac. You can clearly see it looks like a damn F-18 at about 40 miles out. But as it goes further away, just like you see all the videos of these airliners, that you can't really discern the wings at a certain point, and they all look like tic tac. I've talked with Kevin Day a good bit and gone over, and he wants answers. He really does.
Oh, sure.
I'm super controversial. I get it. I fully understand. And no one even sometimes wants to admit they even talk to me. But I think everyone wants answers. something factually driven. And but the people that are holding on to whatever you know, whatever their narrative is or their agenda or their story is, and if they can't waver, then that's not a scientific principle there. You know, I have shifted my theories around a good bit. But the original thing I said in the very beginning, which is still true to this day, the technology that you see in all three of those videos is absolutely 100% United States technology.
Yeah.
I do not believe it's extraterrestrial. I have nothing that points me to anything extraterrestrial at all. And I'm only talking about what I see in the videos. And then people say, well, you're totally discounting the witness testimony. Yes, because if I'm only looking at the video, that's all I'm supposed to report on.
That's right.
And that's all I have to go on. You know, how many times have you heard someone, I don't know, just, you know, if you look at it from a scientific principle or a scientific standpoint, eyewitness testimony is at the bottom.
Not even scientific. Let's look at it from a court of law.
Yeah, exactly.
If you look at it from any prosecutor's point of view, where it's let's look at things beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
And we're going to convict somebody of murder.
Yeah.
On the case of reasonable doubt.
Yeah. But everybody remembers those videos where they're watching the, you know, those
right.
true crime stories. Oh, the eyewitness testimony. He did it. He did it. And then the next thing you know, that guy's
testimony is dependable maybe 30% of the time. Maybe you're amped up. You got a situation going on. What's your recollection? What did you eat 3 days ago for lunch?
Exactly. But did you see the dancing bear?
Yeah.
That's what I love.
That's right. That's right. How many times did the basketball get passed? The question is, did you see the dancing bear?
Exactly. Everybody's like, what?
That's the observation test. And absolutely. And it's also one of those, like, are you passing a bias test? Are you willing to admit that the information you're looking at might be biased to your own point of view? And are you willing to accept that? Are you willing to put that to the test? You know,
and that's because, like, the data that I'm going to send you, I talked to the actual pilot of the chase plane for the F-18. His name's Dan Purifoy, and so I spoke to him and I told him, I said, it may very well, you may be the Tic Tac, and he was like, what? And I said, because it took me 3 days to get to him because I had to get his wife and some other stuff or whatever, but and he was gone, but. He is the pilot of one of the two white X-43 F-18 chase planes that were in the air during that week, that November 10th to November 16th is the dates that they were flying. That's the exact same dates that Kevin Day saw the objects that he did, which also corresponds. He said he saw them in groups of five or 10 at a time, which is exactly the same number of balloons that were launched.
Yeah.
Exactly. We need two from one. It was two from Point Magoo, two from San Nicolas Island, and one from Vandenberg.
Yeah.
But when I look at the data, the data doesn't necessarily match even my thoughts. So I'm going, damn it, here I go again, down another rabbit hole. But it's just too coincidental to not be. So I'll send that to you. And,
totally.
You'll be the only. Well, you'll be the second person to have it. There's a person that works at a intelligence related company overseas that has it, and you will be the second person to have it. And then I'll release it to everyone here pretty soon. Everybody's like, "Why are you holding on to it?" I'm holding on to it because I've got a reason for that. It'll make sense later. But I do want other people to look at it. People with very varying different perspectives. So you'll be one of those because you're my bud.
Oh, well, thank you. And I always appreciate that. I always appreciate whenever you come on and give us the latest scoop on all kinds of stuff, man, whether it's the exfiltration from people in Afghanistan, whether it's the latest on the information coming from Mandalay Bay, or even in this UAP controversy, because... Uh-huh. Once again, like we've seen the patents, we've seen the stuff for holographic technology pods being put on F-18s to be able to project an actual hologram. I mean, heck, I just posted an article just the other day. I don't know if it wasn't today or yesterday about touchable holograms being created. Like
haptic feedback. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And even beyond haptic feedback, I mean, it's the actual vibration of the light.
Yeah. And before this feel, back in the day, I remember walking into a room in a certain building in Washington, D.C. or near Washington, and reaching up to a globe and being able to spin the globe with my hand. It was kind of quirky, kind of like gimmicky or had some glitches.
Yep.
But I could see that was going forward. And now that same globe is actually in, I think, Hayden Planetarium, up there with some doctor, Neil deGrasse something.
Neil deGrasse. That dude.
Yeah. So, and they have that in there where you can actually interact with it. And the one like you're talking about where you can actually feel it. Now, back in the day, they had to spray this little mist in the air so you could even see it. Now they don't have to do that at all. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, all kinds of stuff. I mean, I just went to the Dudes and Beer to the Curious Realm group. That is four times tonight. Went to the Curious Realm group and actively, all you got to do, folks, is go there and search the topic. I just went and searched holograms, and there's stuff like acoustic tractor beam can grab object from behind obstacles. Mm-hmm. Frank Zappa going on tour is a hologram. holograms that can be touched in midair. MIT artificial intelligence tech can create 3D holograms in real time. Singularity Hub was the one that I just posted a couple days ago about. Scientists create holograms you can touch. You could soon shake the hand of a virtual colleague. And I'm pretty sure if I keep scrolling, I will eventually find the one on
the Navy.
The Navy hologram.
The talking holograms. Those are the ones that are awesome.
Like first touchable hologram created in Japan. All kinds of stuff.
The one where they vibrate the air molecules to the point where they actually create sound. So you can not only project an image somewhere, you can make that image talk.
Yeah, yeah, now can make it speak at the same time.
Isn't that amazing?
Precisely, precisely. Well, man. Thank you so much for coming on, as always. It's always great to talk with you about such technology, such things.
Likewise.
And before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to find the latest videos, stuff like that. Of course, you can always go to CuriousRealm.com/videos.
There you go.
Find the work of 5x5 News. But where can they find you online, man? Where can they follow
you? You'll probably find more on your site than on mine. Since Afghanistan.
You're active in the group,
In Afghanistan, with all the I'm doing there, virtually every free moment that I have is keeping this thing going. Of course, now I'm being accused of not actually doing that, which I think is really funny. Yeah. When these people find out exactly who it is that we're bringing out, it'll be funny as hell. I'll tell you after this.
Yeah.
But anyway, so if you want to see what I do, because I'm all over the map. There's no rhyme or reason to what I do. I'm just a one man band. I don't have some big budget, some huge studio this or that. I don't have nothing like this guy here has. We're doing the show with now.
Oh, yeah,
just search for 5x5 News. It's 5x5 News on YouTube.
Got a budget of hundreds.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got a budget of beer. Budget of beer. Oh man, yeah. We have to do a rekindling on that. I got to come your way and do a live in studio. I haven't had a drink in probably 7 months. I mean, not even a beer or nothing. It's like
wow.
I'm trying to stay laser focused on some of the things that I'm doing, and It's hard, especially with the distractions I've got going on right now with certain Nimitz people or whatever, but it is what it is. Yeah. And I'll get through it. It's not easy, but it'll happen.
Well, man,
I appreciate you as always, dude. Your show is, I mean, I just feel like I'm at home there, just like my lost brother from another mother. And we just start talking. We don't even have to have a script, nothing. We don't even have to say. We could just do a show, just start it and just do it.
We just did.
Yes, we did.
We quite literally just did.
Yeah, tell everybody the truth. It's like literally when you called me at like 15 minutes before the show, I'm like, okay, what are we going to talk about?
There are zero pretenses on my show, Mike. Zero. Yeah,
and I have no notes. I don't look at the screen. Everything, whatever you heard me say tonight is straight from my brain to my mouth.
On occasion, I will get a hold of Mike Turber and John Hall or Billy Joe Kane and be like, hey, I want to have you on and talk about this. Probably about 80% of the time, I call those three guests and I just go, or text them typically, what are you doing Tuesday night?
That's exactly how this happens.
And they'll be like, I don't know. You want to come on the show? Of course I want to come on the show. What are we going to talk about? I'll get back to you on that.
Or like that, like in this case, we would be texting back and forth or whatever, and you'd be like, well, looks like I got a show for Tuesday.
Exactly. You hopped on and commented on something. I was like, I think we need to talk. So, thank you as always for coming on. Thank you, Shannon Ray Caffey, for hooking us up. We'll soon be having a commercial for T-Shirt Toad on here, his business.
You
if you're looking for T-shirts, printing, stuff like that, go on by and check them out, folks. Thank you so much for always listening. Mike Turber, thank you for always coming on. Please do hold the line while we close things out. This conversation, I think, is so important. These conversations are so important, everybody. We need to have open minds, open hearts. That's what this show is about. We are all about conversation, open-minded, open-hearted conversation, understanding what people believe and why they believe it before we decide to judge what they believe and why they believe it. Because, good God, what if somebody judged you for what you believe? So, wow. I just lost the light in my room. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.